The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thank you for joining us on Three-Dimensional Wealth, and I'm your host, Roe Diefendorf. And I'm following through with what I call the Legend Series, and the Legend Series is me searching the universe for what I call the top professionals over the past 50 years or so in the financial service industries, and roping them in and spending an hour with us and talking about what I would say their three-dimensional wealth, not just how they became financially successful, which they all have, but I want to talk about their personal wealth and their wisdom and their values and their belief and their social wealth, how they've made a difference to others during their lifetime. And so today I have the privilege of having Paul Shevlin with me. And Paul has started back, and we'll talk about that, in 1963. But throughout his career, he was in the insurance business. He was a general agent and a leading general agent for National Life of Vermont. He also earned his Chartered Life Underwriter designation and his Chartered Financial Consultant designation. And I think somewhere along in there, he's told me that he was Secretary of the American College in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. So we're going to talk about what he's done in that respect. Paul's got a wife, Peggy, and he has seven children. So I know you're doing something else right, Paul. So I want to welcome you today and thank you for joining us as our guest.
Well, thank you for having me, Roy.
Well, I know that as a legend, you've had a fabulous career. But how did you start that?
Well, I don't think it started out all that fabulous. I was born and raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and went to Scranton Prep, Jesuit High School, which made a big impression on my life, taught me a lot of good things. And, I'm proud to say that my oldest grandson is going to St. Joe's Prep in the fall, and I had one other son that went to St. Joe's Prep. So I started out, went to college. I wanted to be a pharmacist, so I thought. I went to Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and proceeded to major in everything but pharmacy and flunked out after the first year and came back home to Scranton, and my mother wouldn't talk to me, and I realized I had to do something, so I joined the Navy. And in those days, when you joined the Navy and you had a high school education, they would send you to any school you wanted. And so I wanted to be an electronic technician. I figured in those days that was something that would be very important in the future, and I could make some money. Well, anyway, I didn't know about this guarantee, so I just joined just to get out of town. And I ended up in boot camp and on a ship working for some guy with tattoos up and down both of his arms, which I know are common today. In those days, most of the time, only people in the Navy had tattoos. And I found out pretty quick I had made a terrible mistake. So I didn't get my electronic technician school, but I was going to show the Navy, so I studied every night, every single night, and took the test and failed. I had to wait 6 months, and I took the test again and made it. To make a long story short, I made second-class electronic technician, and I was the only second-class electronic technician in the Navy that had ever made it without going to a school. And when I got out, I was so fed up with electronics, I wanted no part of it. And my father-in-law was a general agent in the life insurance business in Philadelphia, and the test I had taken always said I should be involved in sales, so I went into the life insurance business in 1963. 4 years to the day after I got out of the Navy.
Now, your father-in-law, it's interesting because just this past week ago, my son-in-law just came in to work with us, and I'm very excited. He's scared to death. And so let me ask you about working for your father-in-law. What was it like, and was he a mentor, or what is it that made you draw, and did you go with him?
Well, it was kind of interesting. Initially, when I married his daughter, I got married in 1962. He wanted no parts of me as a son-in-law. Because I hadn't gone to college. I was from Scranton, Pennsylvania. My parents were, fairly class individuals. But, you know, over the years we became, I think I kind of impressed them because my first full year in 1964, I was rookie of the year in the company nationally. You know, I had the most production from any new agent. So we became great friends. And I learned an awful lot from him. He was a tremendous salesman. And he was really, really good with the home office. I mean, he knew how to get things done, you know. So we became wonderful friends. Unfortunately, he died at the age of 60 from a heart attack. And, you know, we didn't spend I was president of the Philadelphia Life Underwriters, and I was going to the National Association of Life Underwriters Convention in Washington, D.C., and he was coming with me with my mother-in-law and my wife, and unfortunately he died the weekend before, so we never did get to do that. But he was a great human being. I learned a lot from him. I spent basically 11 years with him, so we had a lot of time together, and we became fast friends. I mean, we never really acted as if we were father-in-law and son-in-law. We really acted as if we were just good friends.
What about others? Any other significant others? I'm always interested to hear how individuals get started. And, you know, I heard you talk about work habits. You studied every night. So obviously you were able to put your, you know, nose to the grindstone.
Yeah, but I'm one of two kids of, my father was a truck driver. My mother worked at Sears Roebuck. My mother was a human dynamo. I don't know how to describe it, but I'll just give you an example. She was one of four in a family, and her father died in the coal mines. And she had to quit grade school in the sixth grade and go to work to support her brothers and sisters. So that made her kind of a very, very uneducated but very, very strong person. And I've always admired her for that. She was a disciplinarian. She, you know, she just taught me a lot of great values. And she just died, incidentally, a year and a half ago, sort of at the age of 88. But she made a big difference. I don't have to tell you, my wife was in the insurance business all of her life.
Well, that's
because
right.
Her father was a general agent and an agent prior to that. So, you know, she's always understood the business, you know, when we talk about it at night. She never got mad because I spent too many hours at it. I mean, she understood how difficult it was. So they're probably, my father-in-law, my wife, and my mother are probably the three most important people in my life.
You know, when you think about the business, I mean, and of course, I came from a family, I'm the fourth generation. And
right.
So as I came in to the business, I mean, there was nothing else. I mean, I made my decision. I said, here it is. I burned my, you know, all my bridges behind me. And I said, this is it. I'm going to be the best there can be. And as I went along, if you don't have somebody that understands or has that commitment to it. So, you know, my wife would say, you know, do you really have to be working this hard? Can't you come home at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon? And I said, yeah, but you're not going to be living here, you know? And I said, there's a certain commitment what we're doing. And again, I look back, I was fortunate because I had the ability to know and meet all of the top producers, general
right.
agents, because of my dad. And I watched them and I said, boy, you know, the things that they're doing for their clients, number one, the way they're able to provide for their family, the independence that they have. And you put all those together, and I always had a high regard for the profession. You know, people say, well, you know, if you were selling insurance, you know, you're selling, you know, you might as well be selling used cars. And I looked at it, the guys I knew were the top guys. I mean, I had, you know, I had them up there with doctors, lawyers, Indian chief, you know, and right at the top. And I was fortunate to have that. So in our family, I mean, if you have somebody who's in on the, right from the ground floor, who understands what it really can be like in
you know,
a professional organization.
It's interesting that you don't know this. You wouldn't have any way of knowing this, but probably in the 1978 or 79, I visited with your father in his office in New York City at a sales builder meeting.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you know what sales builders were.
Yeah.
And I sat in on the meeting, and the impression, I was just talking to him about this in November when I saw him,
the impression I had when I left that meeting was that these were really a bunch of average guys, very, very nice people. They weren't these powerhouses, you know, that I thought they were going to be. What they really were people that were average, who had tremendous discipline, and they did all of the right things every day, you know. And that's what made a difference. They didn't know all these wealthy people. They just spent a lot of time getting referrals and talking to people and doing the things you have to do to be successful in the business.
Isn't that interesting? Well, the way I put it is, you know, so they were really ordinary people who actually, when they put them all together, did extraordinary things.
Absolutely.
And that was really the fun part. I mean, I think back to the kinds of people that we had that, you know, my dad was sort of watching over. We had one guy that was a shepherd. Came over from Ireland, he was a shepherd. We had another one who was a butcher. We had another one who was in Rommel's Tank Corps.
Wow.
We had another one who was an Orthodox rabbi. And another one who was an SS troop. Now, these are all in the same office. I mean, I kept thinking, you know, we're going to have a holy war here. And yet somehow, all these ordinary people worked together. And again, we had a, you know, fairly good organization and did extraordinary things and had a you know, deep respect for each other over those years. Yeah, it was really pretty interesting.
You know, when you talk about how helpful the spouse can be in the business, Peggy and I used to, after I found somebody who I thought I might want to hire, the next step was to go out to dinner with his wife and meet his wife and have Peggy meet his wife and have Peggy ask his wife questions. Because very often we would see this person who we knew could be successful, but if the wife wasn't willing to sacrifice as well, he wasn't going to be successful. I can think back on a number of people that we didn't hire because of that dinner meeting.
It was interesting. I've had the chance to visit with Tom Wheeler. I know you know Tom. And he was saying the same thing. He said he would always have his wife come and meet with, you know, the prospective agent and his wife to get her perspective on the situation as well. We're going to take a short break here, Paul, but we will be back for more of Three Dimensional Wealth. So stay tuned for more of the Legend series. Hang on.
Business information you need. From the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. Don't wait.
Maybe it's a loved one suddenly slurring their speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
What I want want to be when I grow up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion.
We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
I'm here with Paul Shevlin, and we're discussing what it takes to be a legend. And, Paul, I put you in that category of legends. And the reason is that throughout your lifetime, the things that you've done that we're going to talk about have made you financially successful, but also personally wealthy and socially wealthy. And when you put those together in the totality of your wealth, you're right at the top and become a legend. So we're glad to have you again with us. One of the things I just want to tell you about is what we've done in our practice, Paul, is we've really tried to develop and become what we call three-dimensional wealth practitioners. And by that I mean is not just being financial planners and not just, you know, putting things on the spreadsheet and so we can quantify it and chart it and graph it and do all those kind of things. And the goal being to just maximize the amount for the family and minimize the taxes. But what we've tried to do in addition is then discuss with the individual, with the families, you know, the intangible assets, their values and their beliefs, and what really, you know, the impact that that has, and if it really does have value, how to capture it, protect it, you know, and preserve it for future generations. So one of the things that I'd like to throw that over to you and talk about are maybe some of the values that in your lifetime you felt have been key in terms of your personal wealth, and maybe talk about if you're doing anything. I'll talk about what we're doing to help perpetuate and protect them. But I'm going to let you talk about personal wealth, if you would. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, I think most of my life, because of my upbringing, I've been very, very frugal. And one of the things that general agents and agents in our business tend to do is overspend. I've told my sons who are in the business that a general agent has never failed because he didn't recruit the right people or you know, he didn't do enough business. It's usually because he spends more than he makes.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that number one, I think you have to live within your budget. I have a wonderful wife who you know, just handles our money and does it very frugally when we didn't have any and when we have some. I mean, I don't write any checks. I just hand her all the checks, and I'm very comfortable that she's going to do what's in the best interest of us. And I had the same kind of a relationship in the agency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing is I always kind of believe that you had to save first. And if you did save first, you could spend all the rest and not worry about it. When I was an agent, I used to take an envelope and I used to say, this is a check. And I'd say, now this is what happens to with your check every 2 weeks. You get it and you rip this off for the mortgage company, and I'd rip a piece of the envelope off. You rip this off for the telephone company. You do this for the food. You do this for the drugstore. And what would happen is you get down, and you'd have a little tiny little piece of paper left, and I'd flip it up in the air, and I'd say, and that's what you're saving for yourself. Then I'd take another envelope out, and I'd rip a piece of it off, you know, maybe 10% of it, and say, this is the way you have to take care of yourself for the future. You take that piece and you put it away from yourself, and then you take care of everybody else. The other thing is you got to buy a lot of life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that concerns me today about this total wealth management kind of a thing is that we're selling less life insurance than we used to sell because it's easier. I mean, I have to tell you, you know, it's easier to sell securities or annuities than it is to sell life insurance. And life insurance has never really ever been bought by people. There's an interesting thing going on right now. You may have seen it in the Wall Street Journal, but Mass Mutual has agreed to give life insurance policies to people that need them for free. No premiums, okay? And guess what? They can't even get all the people signed up that they've budgeted for free life insurance. So, I mean, this gets an example of how life insurance has to be sold. And you know, you got to buy a lot of it. I bought a lot of it, fortunately. And it's really the key to my giving, you know, my stretching myself out for the next 100 years with my children and my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Without it, I would not be able to do it. And so they're kind of my values. I always save the money. I never spent a whole lot of money. This house I'm sitting in, we've lived in since 1981. We do own a place in Naples, Florida, which we live in 6 months of the year. But we've always lived within our means. And at this stage in my life, I'm 65 years of age. I feel pretty comfortable that we're not going to have to worry about money for the rest of our lives, which is saying a lot. And I'm never going to have to touch any of the cash values of those life insurance policies either. I mean, eventually someone else is going to benefit from those policies, not me.
You see, now those are solid principles. And, of course, if you can pass that on to the next generation and learn from you, you know, they say that the smart man learns from his own mistakes, but the wise man learns from the mistakes of others. And so whether those are mistakes, right or wrong, but that they can learn from those values. So live within your budget, I think, is great. Save first. It's interesting because in the book that, that I've written, Three-Dimensional Wealth, we actually go beyond that. And I know that when I was taking all my CLU, CHFC classes, they'd say, well, you know, what you need to do is pay yourself first. Save first and then spend what's left over. And that's how you become financially successful. And I said, well, let me give another little twist to this and be a little more radical. And so in my book, I say, well, here's another concept. Give first, and then save, and then spend what's left over.
Right.
And so some people probably put the book down at that point and said, enough of this. But that's a principle that we hold to and say, you know what, here's how we can help you turn a life of financial success into a life of significance. And, of course, the part about buying the insurance, I agree with you, is that, you know, when every time virtually that I visit with somebody, you know, do they really have the right coverage that they need? Never. And so our job is to help educate them and understand where the liabilities are and then, you know, help fund those liabilities. But I think a lot of it is ignorance. And then and even once they know, like you talked about, helping people do the things they need to do because they wouldn't do it. I mean, the question is, how many people die without a will? I mean, the last time I heard, I think it was something like 7 out of 8 people die intestate, and yet they know they're going to die. They know they have financial resources, and so, yeah, we need to be doing those things.
Well, you know, the problem with life insurance with younger people is that they don't envision needing any at age 65.
Mm-hmm.
So they fall for the term. You know, so they buy the term, and then their idea is they're going to give it up at 65. Well, the fact is that you know, I'm 65, and fortunately, about 70 to 80% of my coverage was whole life. I'm not paying any premiums. I don't have any premiums either, but I have the coverage. I don't have to give anything up. The only policies that I have to continue throwing money at are the universal life policies that I bought, which were a terrible mistake. I never should have bought them. The whole life has just been phenomenal. I mean, my cash values go up 6-7% every year, and I don't make any premium payments. And the coverage is in force. You know, when I die there, it's going to be there.
Isn't that something?
I run into people with these seminars that we do. We attract a lot of people 55 and older.
And they now realize that they need this life insurance. Unfortunately, half of them can't buy it, you know, because of their health and the premiums are so high. And somehow or another, we've got to get that message across to younger Americans that part of their savings should go into permanent life insurance that you can keep for your whole life and not have to give up when you're 65 and most apt to need it.
Well, go back, reflect back. I mean, how has the industry changed from when you first began back in 63, I think you told me?
Right. Well, I guess I'd start with the products. In those days, the 60s and 70s particularly, the insurance companies took all the risk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when a person bought something from me as an agent, they were pretty much guaranteed what was going to happen. Today, most products are the client is taking the risk. A lot more variable life, a lot more universal life is being sold than whole life. So that's a major change, really a major change. In those days, when someone died, any estate in excess of $120,000 had a 50% estate tax at the first death. So there wasn't any such thing as second to die. You know, it was always a first to die problem. You know, when the husband died or the wife died, it was going to probably be a tax. Certainly when the husband died. Most of the great agents in our business came out of agencies. You know, they were part of organizations. The Equitable, Mutual of New York, New York Life, National Life, New England, Mass Mutual, Connecticut Mutual. Unfortunately, some of these names will be forgotten in the next 10 years. Mutual
sure.
of New York and Connecticut Mutual don't even exist anymore, basically. Replacement was almost non-existent in those days. I mean, I probably should talk about that a little bit later, but
we'll come back to that then. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Right here's some background music. It means we're going to take a short break, but stay tuned. We'll be back with Paul Shevlin. We're going to talk more about three-dimensional wealth. Thank you.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
As a financial planner, do your clients really read all that computer-generated boilerplate text in an analysis? The FPS Financial Planning Software is designed for you to show your clients a concise and easy-to-follow report of their financial needs. The FPS system guides your clients to clearly see any needs that they may have in the achieving of their goals. Clients are guided to a decision rather than just reading the analysis. For a free copy of the FPS system, call 1-800-245-1991. Once again, that's 1-800-245-1991.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi. You can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist?
Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
We now return to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three-Dimensional Wealth, Roy Diefendorf.
Welcome back. For today, my guest is Paul Shevlin. And we're talking to a great legend in the insurance business, and he's been reflecting about changes that have occurred since he started. And when we left off, we were talking about different products, and I think you were touching on replacement and what that means to the industry, what that means to the individuals, what that means to the companies. So if you would pick up where you left off, I think that was interesting.
Yeah, when I started out, and this probably lasted for maybe 10 or 12 years, twisting was almost non-existent, or replacement was non-existent, because there was a twisting law in every state that said basically if you took one policy and cashed it in and bought another one, that you were breaking the law. So the relationship of agents was much better then than it is today. You know, they respected each other and they respected each other's clients. Now, ironically enough, the incident that caused this total shift in the industry came about because of Herb Denenberg, who was a Wharton School professor who became insurance commissioner in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And Denenberg started rating different companies based on a formula that he had developed. And so what happened was people would say, well, why don't I have that policy? You know, why do I have this Prudential policy? I can buy this policy. It's a better policy, so Herb Denenberg says. Well, Denenberg, in order to justify this whole process, he's the guy that invented the replacement rules in the state of Pennsylvania, the first state that had them.
I didn't know that.
And then every other state followed suit. And those replacement rules are what made replacement easy. As long as you completed the forms, you could replace. It didn't matter whether it was good or bad for the client. It only mattered that you were legally right. It was no longer twisting because you filled out the replacement forms. And now, incidentally, you have exactly the same thing going on. It's in the beginning stages, but it's going to become an epidemic, is life settlement. There are people out there that are approaching people like me. Now, I'm probably uninsurable, so it wouldn't work with me. But if I was insurable, they'd buy all my life insurance policies and pay me a fairly healthy sum of money, much in excess of my cash value. And then they'd show me investing that money and turning right around and buying a new life insurance policy. And it's going on, and believe me, it's really... I mean, it's a small number today because there's not that many life settlement companies, but it's going on, and it's going to be the next wave of replacement, which is a shame because in my experience, 85% of the time, replacement just didn't pay off. You know? But, you know, our insurance commissioner started it all by making replacement legal, really.
Well, one of the other changes I think is dramatic is just the fewer agents that there are today.
Oh, yeah, well, there's fewer agencies, number one. I mean, when I went with the National Life in 1963, I was the 74th agency out of 75. National Life probably has 35 agencies today.
Mm-hmm.
But there's much more dramatic. I mean, Prudential's under 100. They were over 500. Connecticut General was in mid-100s, maybe 130, 140. And they probably only have 20 agencies today. So if you're going to have less agents, you're going to have less agents. I mean, and you're going to recruit less agents. I mean, the industry, in terms of new people coming in, has been going down for years. And in terms of number of lives, number of policies that are bought has been going down for years. It's a trend that's probably 15 to 20 years long. I don't know when it's going to bottom, but you're right. There are.
But that has significant implications.
Oh, absolutely. It does. Absolutely. Well, you know, it has some government implications. I mean, if the number of agents can't do the job, then guess who's going to step in and do it for you?
Mm-hmm.
Government will. And, you know, it's never better when the government does it. I mean, money gets lost in the process. So yeah, we have an industry problem, and I don't know the solution to it. I know what the National Life did. The National Life has always, as you know from the industry, been kind of an upscale company.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it seems like almost every company wants to be upscale. But they started a separate division, and they have more agents in the separate division than they have in the division I was in. And they are basically going after middle America. And I think that's good for the business, and it's good for the country. I mean, somebody's got to be talking to all these people. I mean, there are the debit companies are down to one or two, I think, in the whole United States now. So a lot of the ordinary people are not even seeing an agent. I mean, every survey that LIMRA, the Life Insurance Marketing mm-hmm. Research Association, runs determines that more and more people want to see an agent, and they're not seeing them, you know, because everybody's going after that top piece of the marketplace.
Sure. Well, the other thing now, when you start to look at the educational institutions, for example, the American College, they have fewer matriculants
yep.
these days, I believe,
and
yet the need for education and to be educated in this field as it gets more complicated is greater. So now we've got that being, I think, a problem coming up in the future.
Yeah, they've kind of tried to expand their base by Merrill Lynch is now, I think, a number of the big brokerage firms are now working with the college. So that kind of helps, because that's a market that they really didn't touch before. But there's no question that it hurts organizations. I mean, the National NAFA in Washington, which was the old NALU, I mean, when I was a membership chairman for the state of Pennsylvania, I think NALU probably had 150,000 members. It now has less than 80.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dramatic shift.
Well, tell us about what you were doing at the American College, because I know that you volunteered and you've been involved in many of the organizations throughout the industry to make a difference. But maybe you can share with us what you're doing with your social wealth.
Well, I guess maybe as I think back over all these years, you know, the two biggest things that I'm proud of, I think, is the fact that I've raised seven children and been able to send them all through college and marry off five of them. The other thing is I'm very proud that I've been married to the same woman for 44 years last week. She's been a tremendous mother and wife. I'm also very proud of the fact that I've served a great industry.
Mm-hmm.
I made up my mind early on that I had to give back. So I was, you know, president of all of the Philadelphia organizations, NAFA, GAMMA, the Philadelphia State Planning Council. Then I went on to be president of GAMMA International, which is, you know, in Washington. And then when I was president of GAMMA International, I started the GAMMA Foundation, which I was chairman of. I just stepped down as chairman 2 years ago. Then I spent 8 years on the board of the American College. I've given a fair amount of money to the American College, supported the American College, had my agency meetings there every month. You know, I got a master's degree from the American College, so I'm very fond of the college. And you probably knew John McCall.
Oh, sure.
John and I were great friends, and John belonged to our club in Florida, as a matter of fact. And to this day, we still go out to dinner with Connie, his widow, who's now mm-hmm. remarried. But you know, John gave a lot of money to the American College when he passed away. So I'm proud of the fact that I was on the LUTC board, almost every organization I work for in one way or another. And, you know, it's very helpful. I was mentioning to you earlier about needing some help with one of my kids, and, you know, you now go back to some people that you helped over the years and ask them to help you, and they're more than willing to do that. So I'm very proud of my activity in the business. I mean, between building the agency and doing all those things, I don't have to tell you, when you're president of a national organization, you know, you travel a couple hundred thousand miles in a year, you give all kinds of talks, and you know, you don't have a whole lot of time to spend building your agency. So it takes a lot out of you, but it was well worthwhile. I got out of it much more than I gave, actually.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you said, I decided early on I had to give back. And so the question I was going to ask is, well, why did you determine that you had to give back, and didn't it cost you something?
No, not really. I think when you weigh everything, it didn't cost me anything. I never would have met your father. I mean, there were people that I met, Bill Wallace, who to this day is a very, very good friend. I met all these people because of my involvement in the industry. Without that, I never would have met them. I mean, you've had Bob Savage, I think, on your show.
Yep, I have.
Bob and I are great friends. Jim Morgan. All of these people, I met Jim Morgan at the college when I was involved in the master's degree program. So without doing all those things, I never would have met all those people, Harry Hoopuses of the world. All these guys you learn so much from, you know. On a scale, I'm sure the scale's balanced. I'm positive. I never felt like my son, the one who took over the agency, always felt like I gave too much. Mm-hmm. I think he's now beginning to see that maybe it's worthwhile.
No, I tell you, it is what we're trying to, again, get the clients that we have to understand that, you know, it's not just all about you, and that in the totality of your wealth, in fact, you can be wealthier by giving away your time or your money. And if you do that, you have a much better chance of being a person of significance. And so that's where the fun part of what we're doing. And we're using things like family foundations in order to help train heirs in what they're going to do and yet understand what it's about, philanthropy, because, you know, if you don't, most people, you said early on, I heard you say the words, early on I decided I would, give back. I'll tell you what, the people that I've seen, I don't know what you've seen, Paul, but the people I've seen, if they haven't decided that early on, when they say, well, you know, when I make it, then I'll give it away, or then I'll have the time to give back, when they get there, doesn't happen. And it's those people who have developed patterns early on, and say, you know what, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to give back. And so what we're trying to do is help to create healthy families and the healthy children for the next generation. You know, the stuff I'm working on is the 22nd century stuff, is to help them understand that it is a good thing. In fact, you can amplify your wealth by giving away. So that's what we've experienced. We're going to take a break, Paul. We're going to be back for our last session with you. But stay tuned for more of Three Dimensional Wealth.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker, The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment.
From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk, heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Mind Your Business with Danielle Hampson talks about the nuts and bolts of starting, running, and expanding a business. From time management, leadership, sales, marketing, and customer service, to office management, using technology, business plans, accounting, taxes, and networking. Danielle and her expert guests share their years of experience on a variety of topics. Tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel for Mind Your Business with Danielle Hampson. Useful tips, authoritative advice, creative solutions, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roey Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roey Diefendorf.
Our show for today is part of what I call the Legend Series. And as part of that series, we have Paul Shevlin with us. And Paul, as a industry leader in the insurance business and seen the cycles and all of the changes that have gone on, I want to sort of focus on three things. And I'll let you take them whatever order you want. But one would be, for anyone from the public that's listening, what are the characteristics, the qualities, what should they look for in an advisor? And the second one would be for the rookie. What would you say for a new advisor starting in? And then the third piece would be for the guy that's been doing it, he's there for 30 years, and what should he be doing differently? And so if you can tell us and share your wisdom on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, what was the first one, Murray?
Well, for someone in the public.
Okay, I think that first of all, you know, designations do mean something, so I think it's important, realizing, of course, that you can't have a designation automatically. You've got to be in the business a few years before that mm-hmm. happens. But I think it's important, whether it be the CIU, CHFC, you know, or if somebody's involved in the process of getting those designations. I think you want to deal with somebody that's trustworthy. I have always found that most people are attracted to people that they trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've been around a little bit in life, it doesn't take you long to draw those conclusions. I think honesty and integrity are important. That's all a part of trust. I think that's what you have to look for. A hardworking person, you know, not somebody that's a hit or miss kind of a person, but somebody who's in it to stay, has, you know, has an address, has a phone number, has a secretary, is established and is trustworthy.
My dad used to say, he said, you want somebody that just doesn't know the tricks of the trade, but he knows the trade.
Yeah. Well, I used to say when I was hiring an agent, one of the last questions I would ask myself is, would I buy insurance from this person?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is no, why would anybody else? So don't hire him, you know. You have to have a person of integrity that other people will trust. And if you don't, you know, he's not going to make it in the business. I think your next question was about what advice would you give to somebody young?
Yeah, someone just coming in, my son-in-law.
It's interesting. I used to give when I was president and president-elect of GAM, I probably gave 50 talks in a year. I always used to end up with a, and I don't remember all the particulars of it now, but it was basically a talk about discipline. And, you know, I would talk about all the things you can't change. You know, every individual has certain built-in qualities that the old Select Research Institute, which is now the Gallup poll, used to say people seldom change, and they don't. You know, your son-in-law is your son-in-law, and the basic ingredients are there. But discipline isn't one of those things. Discipline is a self-imposed thing. It's not something inherent inside of someone. So if you can be disciplined to do the right things every week, now in my agency and with me as a young agent, I had to get 20 appointments a week. I'd make 20 appointments, and I couldn't come home Friday night until I had 20 appointments the following week. And, you know, 15 of them would keep. And if I could get 7 or 8 fact finders out of 15, mm-hmm. then I'd make a couple sales a week. And I, for the most part, I always sold 125, 150 lives a year. And, I think you have to be disciplined. You have to have goals. If you're not, if you can't possibly have 15 appointments a week, then you better get 30 referrals so that the following week you can get 15 appointments. But you have to be disciplined about it. You can't, you know, when things are good, you can't stop doing the right things. And of course, when things are bad, you must do the right things. So, I think discipline is a key ingredient. I think the other thing is, you know, it helps if you run around the right circles and do the right things. I always felt that, you know, my daughter, for example, sent me an email today, you know, along with a lot of other people, trying to raise money for the Cystic Fibrosis Society. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I gave her money over the internet. And so did other people. I noticed there were 3 or 4 other people that had given. You know, I think that you got to get yourself involved. She's very much involved with our church. She's involved in this charity because one of the kids that's in her son's class, my grandson's class, has the problem. So I always felt that agents should be involved in stuff like that. Little League, Chamber of Commerce, the Rotary is a tremendous organization. Mm-hmm. It does a whole lot of good throughout the whole world. I mean, they had Rotary meetings when I was on an island a couple of weeks ago. But you need to do all those things, and in the process of doing that, you'll meet tons and tons of people. And that's all you really need to do is meet people.
I didn't hear you say cold call in there. But
well, there was a period of time when we did that, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
We had a, and this kind of addresses the last question, the older agent.
Yeah.
We had a little stagnant group of people who had been, I think we probably had at one time maybe 7 or 8 guys in the top 25 of the National Life. And we decided to go use a mentoring system where new people would come into the business and their sole job would be to make 100 cold calls a day. Tries. Not contacts with people, mm-hmm. but they would call 100 business owners a day. And let me tell you, you talk about baptism of fire.
I don't think
but they were making appointments for that mentor. You know, and these are things the mentor wouldn't do. And the new guy, the new kid in the block who was called a runner, he would get 25% of the case if anything was written. But the big thing is he would go out with the mentor and watch how the mentor handled the interview. And there's an old story, you know, that you learn a lot more by watching someone than by reading about it. You know, if you played a round of golf with Jack Nicklaus, you'd probably learn a lot more just watching him swing than reading his book, My Way, Golf mm-hmm. My Way, you know. We did that for 5 or 6 years, and some of the best agents in our agency today were runners from that era, you know, who became pretty good agents because of that training.
Well, I think that, you know, I picture this thing of having like old logs in the fire, and, you know, they starting to smolder out, and taking some small logs and, you know, some kindling, and you stick them in and you fan, and the next thing you know, the old log is burning again. And I think what you just said is, you know, you bring in some of that new blood and you put it together, because there are people out there these days that, you know, have just lost you know, their enthusiasm. And I've recently talked to several of them,
they say, you know, they're having their worst years, but they've continued to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah, well, that's lunacy.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, I think having a, you know, if you want to sell your practice someday, you need to have somebody to sell it to, and the best person to sell it to is somebody that you work with for 4 or 5 years and gets to know your clients. It's good for him and it's good for you. You know, it's we don't have enough of that in our industry.
Mm. I mean, see, that's what we do need.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question: is a legend? How would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? Well, I think basically that I was a hardworking young man from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who kind of worked real hard, showed a lot of discipline, and got to the top of the industry. And along, you know, I went into the General Agents and Managers Hall of Fame, which your dad is in. And along the way, I tried to help as many people as I could by giving myself back in terms of the industry. So, you know, I feel pretty good about who I am, and I think I've helped people, and certainly people have helped me. So just the fact that you asked me to be on this radio program is a very nice gesture.
Well, you're one of the heroes, and I'd like to end with this quote because I think it's terrific. It says, societies grow great when old men plant trees who say they will not sit under. And I think there are so many of you and that have planted trees, and what's going to come up is going to be terrific, and you've planted, and the dividends will be far beyond what you're going to see. So we really appreciate it. Paul,
thank you.
I want to thank you for joining us today, and I hope the listeners have enjoyed our discussion. I invite you to join me next week at the same time with more of Three Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Three Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three Dimensional Wealth right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk.